Hello, everybody, and welcome to Absurd Hypotheticals, the show where we overthink dumb questions so you don't have to. I'm your host, Marcus Lehner, and I'm joined here today by Chris Yee and Ben Storms. Say hi, guys.
Hello, I'm Chris Yee.
Hey, I'm Ben Storms. And last week, so I guess sort of as a little background, Fridays I work from home. It's great. Super nice.
Lucky bastard.
Yeah, it's really one nice little perks about my job.
Some of us actually work on Fridays, Ben.
Hey, I do actually work.
It's not work if you're in pajamas.
Sometimes I'm not even in pajamas. I'm just like in like my underwear. No joke.
Oh, that makes it better.
Like, this podcast isn't work, so I podcast in pajamas.
I also sometimes podcast in my underwear when it gets really hot.
So that's how you classify. If you're not at work, you have to be in your pajamas. That's Marcus's definition.
I mean, this is a pretty good way to live, Chris, wouldn't you say?
They're comfy.
Very comfy.
Ben, you had a story?
Yes, I had a story. So the room that I work out of, which is also the room that I'm podcasting from, so it has one of those big windows that has like two sliding halves that you sort of like open each independently, that they sort of like slide across, you know?
Like horizontally?
Yeah, like horizontally. And
like a sliding door, but up the wall.
Exactly, yeah. One of them does not have a screen in it, which is usually not a problem. But because of the way that they're like layered, if one of them is open, technically something could crawl or fly in through the gap between the like open window and the closed one, because there's not that screen there. And last Friday, as I was working, I realized that a hornet had managed to work its way through that gap and was just like sitting on the inside of the screen directly in front of me as I was working. Obviously, I then stopped working.
And then that was the rest of your day.
Well, so it became a very like cat and mouse game where I had to wait for it to crawl behind the window so I could jump up and slam the window shut and just trap the beast, the hornet, so it couldn't get inside. But then what I realized is that because of the way they're layered, when the windows are both closed, it couldn't actually get back outside. It was just stuck there against the screen.
Oh, no.
So I had to basically open it like halfway, and if it started drifting towards the room, close it again. As it started drifting back towards the other window, open up a little bit. And eventually, after about 20 minutes of quote-unquote working from home, I did manage to get out of the window.
Job well done.
Oh, my God. Dude, bees suck. Like, I could just... Like, I want to make fun of you for spending 20 minutes just not killing a bee, but I know, one, I wouldn't either, and two, on a screen, it's going to be such a hard job with such a horrible off... See, there's two ways, because on a screen, there's two problems. One, it's not really a hard enough surface for you to definitely kill the bee.
Right.
And two, because of that, you have to hit it really hard, and there's a good chance you're going to break your screen, your window screen, and then you have to, like, buy a new window screen, which... Where do you even do that? Like,
I don't know. Also, then at that point, more bees are getting in, because apparently they're around.
So you have, like, a hive?
I don't know. No idea. Yeah, probably. I'd assume so.
I've never gotten stung by a bee before.
I have. It's not great.
Really?
Yeah, it's never happened.
How bad does it seem to you?
I mean, in my mind, it sounds like it's just mildly irritating.
So, like, well, you've gotten shots.
It sounds like you're getting pricked by a thorn or something to me.
It's worse than that.
I mean, it's not worse than, like, a thorn that you get that gets you good. A thorn that gets you good, like, you, like, step on it or something. And then the problem is that, like, after it's done stinging originally, which, like, lingers a bit longer than normal, it's then, like, hot and itchy. Mm-hmm. And then, like, when you scratch it, you don't get that relief like a mosquito bite. It kind of just, like, hurts a bit.
You said it's like a shot, right?
It's worse than a shot. It would be more of the thorn, like a not clean shot.
Well, a not clean shot is very bad.
Yep.
And if you're allergic, you're just, I don't know what that's like, because that's horrible. And
yeah, I don't know, like, if I'm allergic, because I've never gotten stung.
Keep it that way.
I feel like that ups the stakes. Like, if you're on, like, a trip with people, and, like, you're on a camping trip, for example, and it's like, there's a bee, it's like, we'll ignore the bees. Like, your one outdoorsy friend's like, oh, we'll ignore the bees. And, like, your other friend's, like, who does not like nature, is like, I'm going to stay in the tent. And then you have to choose which friend to hang out with, and you're like, I kind of want to go outside, but, like, maybe I'm allergic. Maybe I just absolutely get fucked up this trip.
It would be nice to know.
Yeah, I feel like you have to assume that you are allergic for the time being.
But, like, that's no way to live, Ben. It's no way to live.
How often does it really affect you?
I mean, I see plenty of bees.
Speaking of no way to live, how about we jump into our first question, which is, what if no one could die? Chris, do you want to start us off?
Yeah, sure. So, for this question, obviously this affects the world, like, in a big way. I think one of the obvious things is that it's going to be like way overpopulated, the Earth. So I wanted to look at like just the population and how it grows. So I looked up the birth rate and the death rate, the current birth rate and death rate. Right now, the birth rate on Earth is 131.4 million births per year.
Jesus.
Yeah, it's a lot. And the death rate is 55.3 million deaths per year. So the growth is 76.1 million per year. So it's still actually like a decent amount.
Yeah, no, really that is.
That's with people dying. But if people don't die, then it's just going to be, the growth rate is just going to equal the birth rate. Obviously, this is going to be a problem because the Earth can only hold so much. There's like a dispute as to what, how much the Earth can actually hold. Some people are saying as low as 4 million that we 4 billion and that we actually passed it already.
Which, well, you know, I think that theory might be just debunked.
Yeah. And some people are saying it's up to like 16 billion, which we're getting pretty close. Right now, the world population is 7.6 billion. So,
I mean,
we're
glass
like
full, half empty. We're not even close in my book.
I mean, in recent years, the population growth has been like spiking.
Well, it's exponential because the more people that exist are the more people that are boning. Yeah. The more people making babies.
Right.
Exactly. So just with this current growth rate or the new growth rate with no one dying, we would reach 16 billion in 64 years, which is not that far away.
That is way faster than I thought that was going to be.
Yeah.
My first reaction to that was, that's the next generation's problem. Oh, wait.
Nope. I mean, even if we did die, that would still be our generation.
Right.
The thing is, yeah, we don't die. So that capacity number is based on like food and water and how much food and water people need, like shelter and stuff like that. But people don't need that stuff anymore. So it's not really going to matter that 16 billion is going to go way up. I think the only limiting factor is going to be the physical space that you have.
I would argue that people will probably still want food and water and shelter.
Yeah,
quite
they would
a
still,
bit.
They would still want it because they get like uncomfortable and stuff. You get really hungry, but I think eventually you get used to the hunger. And like if you had to, then you could go without eating.
Fair enough. I guess that's true.
Also, Ben, like, it's not really a choice people are going to make. It's the thing that's just going
right.
to keep happening.
Yeah, it's just going to happen.
Right, yeah.
I saw a statistic, and who knows if this is cited or true, but it was saying that 48% of pregnancies in the United States are accidental.
That's pretty crazy.
And not like, it's like a soft accidental, not like, hey, you know, I'm a teenager and you're like, oh my God, we're having a baby. Like, but people just like, oh yeah, we weren't really planning on having a baby right now, but you know, she got pregnant, so whatever.
So even if you assume that people will stop trying to have babies as much once this population growth starts happening, they'll be unsuccessful a lot of the time.
Yeah, people might stop trying to have babies, but people are not going to stop fucking.
Right, exactly, yeah.
People will stop eating though, because food is just going to probably disappear. Yeah, so the only limiting factor is the amount of space. So I want to look at how much space or how much physical amount of people the Earth can hold. So the surface area of the Earth is 196.9 million square miles, and 30% of that is landmass. So just based on those numbers, if we had 16 billion people on the Earth, everyone would have 103,000 square feet per person. So there's a lot of extra room. Based on 16 billion. If we give everyone a 50-foot by 50-foot area, which that's like a decent-sized lot for one person, right? You have room to move around and stuff.
Yeah.
We can fit 657 billion people on the Earth, which is way more than 16 billion. So with this new capacity and the new growth rate, it'll take 4,942 years to hit that. And like Marcus said, it's going to be exponential, so that it'll probably be a little less than that. I'm going to assume like 2,000 years, which is still a good amount. The thing is, 2,000 years, nobody can die. We'll still be around in 2,000 years, so it'll still be a problem. So, right, we don't need food and we don't need water. We also don't need air, so we can actually live underwater. I originally looked at the 30% of landmass on Earth, but we can actually include the surface area of the water, too. So with the new surface area of the Earth can hold 2.2 trillion people. And I didn't look into, like, people living on top of each other.
Right, yeah.
In the water and stuff. I just did, like, the surface area. But people could live on top of each other, too, I guess.
Yeah, we could build, like, apartment buildings or whatever, you know, and stack people. more effectively. Yeah.
Chris, yeah. I like how you're taking another only absolute survival take on this instead of literally any kind of living standard take.
Right, yeah.
It's like, oh yeah, you'll just be suffocating, you know, starving and stacked on top of people all the time, but you'll be alive.
You'll also be constantly drowning.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like,
I mean, all that stuff you'll get used to.
I don't think you can. I think your mind would break. I think you would become like this weird dystopian, like empty shell of a person that's just like, I'm dying all the time. Please kill me. And then they're like, can't.
But you'd be alive.
It's the greatest Twilight Zone episode ever.
Oh, come on. There's got to be at least like 7 Twilight episodes with this exact premise.
Probably. There's a lot of Twilight episodes. Twilight Zone episodes.
Yeah, you guys both just said Twilight, not Twilight Zone.
Yeah, so once we hit the Earth's capacity, right now, actually, like, we're trying to find another habitable planet, or eyeing, like, Mars and stuff like that. But in this little scenario that we've created, every planet is habitable.
Right.
We can live on the moon, we can live on Mars, and we don't have to do anything to the planets, we can just live there. So, the moon has a surface area of 14.6 million square miles, and it can hold 162 billion people. And then Mars is 55.9 million square miles, and it can hold 623 billion people. So that bumps up our numbers a lot. And obviously, you can go through all the planets, too. I didn't do that. But we don't need to stop at the planets. We can also just float through space. We can just live in outer space.
You are really, really stretching the...
Yeah.
I mean, no one can die. So obviously, our population is going to keep on growing and growing and growing. We need more space. We
gotta put them somewhere.
We have space. We have outer space.
You know, there is gonna be a limit somewhere, though, because while these people, like, you have a certain amount of production that you're gonna get on Earth. But once you're in space and frozen, I don't think you can fuck anymore. I think there will be a slowdown.
That's true.
You'll get used to being frozen. You'll adapt.
I don't think you're gonna adapt. I think you're just frozen. I think you're literally an ice cube and your limbs don't work. And you're definitely not going to get a boner. You can't get a boner in a chilly pool. You're not going to get one in space.
Well, the people on Earth can still procreate. And they'll just, like, push the other people outward.
Yeah, but, like, at a small rate. Like, you're not... Like, the amount of things you can do on Earth is not going to relate to the solar system.
Well, no, because... Well, we were saying that the birth rate was going to keep on growing because you'll have more people. And then eventually, I guess, we're hitting the point where you can't procreate in space. But you can still do it on Earth. So then that rate will just kind of even out, but it'll still be pretty high.
There's no other way to pass the time when you're drowning underwater all time for all time, so.
Yeah, so in space, if we look at living in space, the observable universe from Earth has a diameter of 92 billion light years. And that gives a volume of what we can see of the universe, 407 trillion square light years. I mean, cubic light years.
Yeah, units are important when you're talking about light years.
So if you give everyone a 50-foot by 50-foot by 50-foot space, then we can fit 150 tredecillion people, which is a number that has 43 zeros in it.
Yeesh. I'm actually familiar with that number.
Really? I had to look up a chart of big numbers.
Do you guys ever play like those cookie clicker type games?
I've seen them.
So, like, those idle clickers where, like, you start off and, like, the one I'm thinking of is cookie clicker. So you click a cookie and you get one cookie. And once you have, like, 10 cookies, you can make, like, you hire a grandma who bakes, like, one cookie a second. And then you have, like, a cookie machine going. But the way the game scales, like, it just scales exponentially. So, like, after the cookies, you get, like, a cookie factory, which make, like, 100 cookies a second. And then you have 100 cookies a second, and now you're making, like... an empire, which is making, like, 10,000 cookies a second. And it keeps going, like, so far up that you're literally making, like, into these tredecillion numbers of cookies.
So you've reached tredecillion?
Yeah, it's a game about just making numbers big, which is really, honestly, what us and probably our listeners are super into.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We need to get that sponsorship going.
It is our demographic.
Yeah, so that would be the universe, living in the universe. And that's just the observable universe, so it goes further out. We don't know how big the universe is.
But we will once we launch frozen people into it.
Yeah. And it's, I mean, the universe is expanding, so we just keep on getting more and more room. I forget who said it, but someone said that it is expanding at 150,000 miles per hour.
That's actually not a lot in space terms.
But it's a lot in people terms. if you're multiplying people.
But is it a lot in infinite people terms? Space is big.
I mean, I don't know. Maybe eventually we'll run out of space. And normally I would say that's not our problem. But in this case, it still will be a problem. So I don't know. I couldn't go infinitely into the future. But that was my final plan, was just to live in space.
Yeah, Chris's research weirdly did not bring us beyond the known universe.
We have limits. Yeah, so that was my answer. What do you have, Marcus?
Okay, so yeah, so I was thinking about the population going up a little bit, which obviously is unpreventable and eventually will be a problem. But, you know, it's not about the destination, it's about the journey. So I'm kind of thinking, what would people start doing, like, if you can no longer die? And I noticed a couple things that basically just turn our planet into a party planet. Because, like...
All about the parties.
Because, like, first off, you gotta have time to party. And if you can't die, there's not a huge impetus on, like, work, going to work every day. And you can also just be like, I'm not gonna work for, like, 2 or 3 years, and then, you know, I'll just work when I need to. So I feel like a lot of people aren't gonna be working. So there's gonna be plenty of people to party with. Plus, the population's just gonna be soaring. Two, like, the consequences of drinking, like, you can get shit-faced and not worry about, like, waking up. Like, even if you wake up in a ditch, you know you'll be fine, you know, the neck, like, eventually. There's no long-term consequences. Also, no long-term consequences to, like, drunken driving. Like, you could crash your car, but you save up for a bit. Like, you have all the time to save up money to get another car.
I guess we should have clarified that, like, the way we're doing it is, like, you're basically Wolverine or, like, Deadpool.
Oh, yeah, yeah, like, yeah. Heal right away. Yeah, I guess we didn't talk about exactly the mechanism that we chose. So what we chose is the good version of immortality, where you don't age. Well, you age up to, like, adulthood, like, your prime, like, say,
like 30.
25, 30. Then you stop. You're not going to age anymore. You stay healthy, and then you can quickly regenerate from injuries and, you know, maimment and, you know, probably, like, whatever, disarmaments or whatever. So that you still feel things and pain and all that, but, like, it's not going to actually kill you. But I think if, like, you're incapacitated, you could stay incapacitated. I tried not to go into the dark, dark depths of, like, ways to, quote-unquote, get rid of people that can't die.
Right.
Because, like, getting dumped to the bottom of the ocean and, like, being under that pressure, it wasn't really a happy place for me, so I went back to partying.
I went there, so that's okay.
So, like, driving is going to be fucking buck wild, because the impetus not to drive, like, 150 miles an hour on the highway is, one, like I said, the safety concern, which is not really a super big concern. And two is, like, the financial thing of your car being wrecked, which, like, is not... You're just less worried about it when you have, like, all the time in the world. So there's going to be a whole lot of drunk driving people having a great fucking time. And another thing I noticed, and I'm hoping you guys can help me build out on some of the implications here, but effectively there are no more children. So all the kids grow up, you know, you're 30 and you don't die. And so, yeah, people are going to still be having kids, but I think we're definitely going to slow down the kid-making train because overpopulation is a problem. So that's going to slow down, but also just proportionally, there's going to be, like, whatever the adult-to-kid ratio is now is going to just, like, keep going more and more and more and more into everyone's just an adult because no one is getting old and dying off. So I guess to the tune of, like you said, well, 130 million a year and then 50 million people die?
130 million a year born, 55 million die.
Right. I cannot do that math off the top of my head. But eventually, there's going to be just... It's going to be, like, 95% adults in the world. So we're just going to really have, like, a world where everybody is just, like, young adults. And so one of the things I was thinking is that we actually gain a little bit of resources from this because we're not going to need so many schools anymore so people can live in the schools. And one thing that's always been a personal dream of mine is we're not going to need so many school buses. So there's currently 500,000 school buses in the United States. And just, I did a quick Google of what people do with school buses, and it's fucking everything I want it to be. Like, turn them into mobile homes, like, cool, like, stereo systems, like, just all the coolest shit. Because you just basically have a mobile room that you can renovate however the fuck you want. And that's really all I want to do with my time when I have nowhere, when I cannot die and have infinite time. I just want to renovate school buses.
Specifically school buses. I mean, there are other types of buses and, like, RVs and stuff.
Oh, yeah, there's lots of bus and RV, but there's something like, pure about taking a school bus, which has a very specific purpose, and just being like, no, this is my school bus. Like, you're going to look at it from the outside and be like, yeah, that's a school bus, but when you look on the inside, it's going to be me partying and drunk driving.
You don't want, like, a Hummer limo? Those are pretty cool.
But school buses will be very cheap because we don't really need them anymore.
Yeah, like, you just get these as handouts. Like, it's going to be like, I don't know, not taking the kids anywhere, just take a school bus.
You get a school bus, and you get a school bus.
And everyone gets a school bus. And that's going to be, like, the cool hipster thing to do. So they're going to make more school buses for the not school children.
Right.
Vintage school buses.
Yeah, like, it's going to be, like, a very prestigious thing to have one of the OG school buses that actually took kids. Like, if you have gum on the bottom of the seat, people are going to be like, oh, wow, like, this guy's got it. This guy's legit.
You can't fake it, though, because they'll be able to tell fake gum.
You can always tell fake gum.
Can you, though? Like, I don't know if I don't buy that one exactly, because gum is one of the things that's basically absolutely unidentifiable from where, you know, it started as, like, I don't know, maybe you could tell the brand, like, I guess you could pick out, like, a Winter Fresh from a Juicy Fruit by the color, but it's literally a glob.
No, fourth grader chews cinnamon gum. This isn't a real school bus.
They'll be able to carbon date it.
Can you carbon date gum? I guess you...
I guess so.
It must have carbon in it, right? Or is it just like a forever thing? Like, does it go away? What the fuck does gum do?
It turns into those weird patches on the sidewalk. Those, like, black patches.
Guys, I'm just gonna do, like, a whole bunch of gum research, like, tomorrow.
So someday it'll be useful for this podcast, probably.
Yeah, can we, like, do a gum question, please? I want to know about gum. And I want to know about the exact mechanism that when you chew a piece of juicy fruit for too long, makes it turn into sand in your mouth.
And by too long, you mean more than exactly 4.5 minutes.
Yeah, it's not like a range of like, oh, you've been chewing this for like somewhere between 20 and 25 minutes. It's like on the second, it just like turns from gum to not gum. And it's the worst mouth experience I've ever had, I think.
You know those rubber erasers you bought when you were in, you know, like middle school? Those were actually just old juicy fruit.
Mm. But it's not even that. It's like, it turns into like a mush, like a sandy mush. It's like, ugh.
That's why I don't chew gum.
Yeah.
You don't chew gum because you're not cool, Chris. Everyone knows the cool people.
That too.
Chew gum and blow bubbles and then they pop and it's like, oh wow, thank God that didn't go on my leather jacket. But yeah. You know how cool I am now.
I was never good at blowing bubbles. I would always try to blow the bubble and just spit the gum out accidentally.
Yeah, same.
Well, you're both not cool. Like, we've just...
I mean, was that really in question ever?
Apparently only a third of us are cool.
Yeah, I can blow super big bubbles. So that's obviously, I'm the coolest.
Anyway, your answer.
Yeah, I mean, can you guys think of any other things that happen, like, when there's no kids around? Like, what can we do? I mean, sex stuff, I guess. I guess there's going to be just a lot more sex shops, but...
But then there'll be more kids. That results in more kids.
I mean, I feel like a lot of things in the sex shop result in non-kid-producing sexual interactions.
That is true.
Yeah, that's true, I guess.
Yeah, once people start getting super kinky, like... Because that's probably going to happen, too. Like, you're going to get bored of sex eventually. So then you're just getting into the kinky stuff. And that's where the population increase is going to start slowing down. So, this is a self-solving problem, guys. I fixed it.
We fixed it.
You personally fixed it.
But I think I'm just going to end my answer by just saying, Chris, I still have trouble with your answer, because I think once people don't get to eat, I think people are going to be very, very upset about it. I think when people cannot eat, they're going to be very unhappy about not eating.
I agree.
There's no way to know who is right, because this will never happen, but I think I'm right.
Can people infinitely eat each other?
I actually did think about that. That's not part of my answer, but we do technically have an everlasting source of meat.
Infinite cannibalism.
just like, and you can, like, couple up on it. Like, you can just be like, oh, you headed off to work, honey? And, like, yeah, it's like you lop off your arm. And then they're just like, how about you? It's like, also, yeah. And then they lop off their arm. And you trade arms. And then it's like, cool, I have lunch.
No joke, since we were talking about how this is sort of based on Wolverine and Deadpool style healing, Deadpool did once feed pieces of himself to someone repeatedly to nurse them back to health. So this is a thing that has come up in our sort of source material.
Right. Okay, Ben, just get your shit over with. Like, let's get through your Deadpool cannibalism one.
That's not actually part of my answer. That's just a thing that I knew, no joke, before we started doing research on this question. what I do with my spare time. Anyway, so what if no one could die? So going off of this sort of Wolverine-y frame of reference for all of this, one of the things I looked up is, just as double checking, he is canonically basically immune to all human diseases. So in case you didn't check that, I checked that. So what that does do is basically destroy the entire health industry.
So no schools and no hospitals.
Yeah, well, and sort of beyond just hospitals, too. So I went to the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics as of May 2017, and all told, between like health and medical insurance, because obviously those aren't really a priority anymore. Pharmaceutical and medicine manufacturing, pharmacies and drugstores, doctor's offices aside from like dentists and optometrists and mental health professionals, those I didn't include, hospitals, nursing homes, and death care services, so, you know, like morticians and whatnot. About 19 and a half million jobs would be eliminated. So the total workforce as of the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics in May 2017 was about 152 million. So about 13% of the workforce, like those jobs would just be gone. And that's kind of a floor. I think it was actually a little bit higher than that because also like life insurance numbers I couldn't get directly, but obviously life insurance, not really kind of a sucker bet at this point. So there are other ones that will be eliminated as well, but a pretty good chunk of the jobs that are available are actually going to be just eliminated, which is cool. And then obviously with overpopulation, unemployment is going to be a thing. So that's not really great. I don't 100% buy your just like not working thing, Marcus. I feel like people are still going to want to do that just to like have something to, because the problem is like you're going to be alive forever. You need to keep yourself busy.
Yeah, okay, yeah, I agree with that.
Yeah, so money does correlate to quality of life.
Yeah, so between just, like, having something to do is nice and working is a thing to do, and it lets you actually do interesting things when you're not working, so people will want jobs and they'll be a little bit harder to get. So human life, as we've kind of discussed sort of in depth in Chris's answer a little bit, will maybe not be great. I did realize that there is actually one pretty big winner in this whole situation. And that is, of course, parasites.
Oh, no. Stop it.
So a lot of parasites, actually, and fun fact, in the process of Googling, I actually did Google, is Wolverine immune to parasites? And it turns out, I never saw the 2013 movie The Wolverine, but apparently part of the plot of the 2013 movie The Wolverine involves him getting a robotic parasite on his heart that takes away his healing powers. I think that movie was bad. I don't really want to see it.
I mean, yeah, Wolverine's struggle with heart disease isn't exactly a good tagline.
Right? So, but anyway, parasites are kind of cool.
Uh-huh.
Marcus is just loving that.
Is the brain parasite making you say that?
No, of course not. That would be ridiculous, Marcus. Why would you say such a thing?
I am glad that Ben did this answer so I didn't have to do research on parasites.
They're actually kind of cool. So, yeah, I'm glad. Yeah, this is why we keep me around, because I research this kind of shit all the time.
Hey, Google, are parasites cool?
Well, no. So, all right. So, actually, parasites, they have a lot of really cool ways they can actually hide from immune systems. So, like, one of them, there are a lot of, like, tissues in the body that are, like, not as policed by the immune system. Like, for example, your central nervous system or your eyes. Just this year, in February, there was the first recorded case of the eye worm Thalassia gullosa in humans. It's usually in cows. The little tiny worm's about a half inch long, and this woman just started getting them in her eyes. So, yeah, that's cool.
Half inch?
Yeah, I know. It's really not great to think about.
That's, like, really big. Like, my eye is, like, an inch and a half, two inches? I can't look at it to measure.
If it reassures you, apparently they just stay on the surface level of the eye. They don't actually go inside of it.
It's still not too comforting.
It's not great.
Let me ask you this, Ben. Did you feel okay when the hornet was only on the surface level of your house?
No.
Yeah.
Also, apparently, when she was going through this, she could occasionally see them swim through her vision.
Oh my god, Ben, I am gonna barf.
I think I actually remember seeing, like, a TV show that went over something like this, like, a long time ago. I forget what it was, though.
Yeah, so some can do that. Some can basically change how they, like appear to the immune system to, like, avoid detection. They can, like, keep, like, different appearances, basically, like, disguises, and, like, switch them around to, like, stay inside you longer.
And not swim right in front of your eye.
So you also see that, it. Yeah. These are not the ones that live in your eyes. Some can apparently actively, like, mess with the immune system to, like, make it work less effectively, which actually is something that has been used to treat, like, autoimmune diseases sometimes. They will use those things that parasites do to actually, like, slow down your immune system from, like, destroying you.
Well, if you can't beat them, join them.
I guess, yeah. I don't know. And so really, sort of what's happening is that in this situation where no one can die, is that sort of the big thing that sort of holds parasites back is that obviously they need, you know, they're trying to take as much from the host as they can without killing them. And now that's not really a problem. So to sort of bring, you know, my general, generally I always have such, you know, cheerful answers. Sort of what I feel like is probably going to wind up happening is that in addition to the overpopulation and whatnot, we're going to start evolving some very, very, very bad parasites.
Yeah.
That are just going to ravage us with our greatly reduced health system.
Oh, man.
So not great.
Yeah.
So not great. But on the bright side, that does mean that maybe not all of the doctors will go away. So some jobs will still be there. So silver lining.
Silver lining for your eye parasites to fuck.
Right. Or just like the worst tapeworms you've ever seen. So that's my answer. I am so sorry, Marcus.
We can count on Ben to get super gross.
Yeah, thanks for that, Ben. Like, I mean, what's wrong with party town? Like, guys, what's wrong with party town? Why can't we have a fucking party town where people are just, you know, pretty happy and maybe overpopulating a little bit, but only because they're having so much fun?
I mean, all the parties are going to make it easier for the parasites to spread. I'm just going to say that.
What you do is you live in space, and the parasites can't live in space.
Unless they have a warm, juicy host to gouge the eyes out of.
Well, we won't be warm. We'll be frozen, but we'll still be alive.
Which is just...
That sounds
yeah,
terrible.
Just a super cheerful thought all around.
So, hey, aren't you guys glad that we're going to die someday?
You know what I'm really glad about, Ben? I'm just so glad that we are moving away from this question and into the ad break. That's what I'm happy about.
Have you ever wished that you could just walk through your lawn and magically have it be mowed? Well, now you can, with the wonderful new clip-flops. Just put these bladed flip-flops on your feet, pass on through, and... Oh, I'm getting an email. Okay, apparently the company has actually pulled the ad because... Oh, okay, so they have some recall out actually on it now because it turns out that's actually as terrible of an idea as it sounds. Doesn't say how many people have been affected. Oh, all of them. Okay, so if you see clip-flops, for the love of God, do not buy them or put them on your feet. Maybe, like, burn them, apparently. Yeah.
Nausea, heartburn, indigestion, upset stomach, diarrhea. We've heard you loud and clear, and that's why we made Pepto-Bismol back in 1982. But since then, we've heard one more thing. What if I don't like pink? Well, how about green? We are proud to announce our latest addition to the Pepto-Bismol family, Pesto-Bismol. We worked with our flavor scientists to infuse our original recipe with the essence of basil, salt, garlic, olive oil, pine nuts, and Parmesan cheese. You'll love the taste of this thick, olive-colored liquid, and you'll love how it makes you feel even more.
Absurd Innovations. Hi, I'm Chris Yee of Absurd Hypotheticals. On this week's episode, Ben has decided to be super gross and point out all the nasty parasites of the world. And what better way to fight super grossness than with super soapness? Introducing the Super Soaper. We've taken state-of-the-art Super Soaker technology and filled it with liquid soap. It's easy to use, just aim at your target and pull the trigger. Have you spotted a parasite on the surface of your eyeball? Just open your lids and squirt some soap in. That parasite won't stand a chance. So next time you have any sort of health problem at all, grab the Super Soaper. From our labs at Absurd Innovations.
Welcome back, everybody. I actually took this ad break to look up if chewing gum actually went away and what happened to chewing gum. And it turns out chewing gum is made up of synthetic plastics and is not biodegradable.
Cool.
So you're chewing on plastic, not food, and it doesn't go away ever.
But it has carbon in it, right? So you can carbon date chewing gum?
I didn't check if you can carbon date. I don't think you can carbon date plastic because it doesn't degrade because it's...
Oh, yeah. That's how that works.
Yeah, we don't try to carbon date things that are made out of plastic because plastic hasn't existed for enough time for carbon to decay. I could be wrong that plastic doesn't decay with the carbon, but I don't think so. Anyhow, that's just so the audience at home knows we actually do get excited about researching stupid shit like bubblegum and labor statistics and whatnot.
You weren't listening to my ad read? It's an important ad read. You're distracted with gum research?
Yeah, I'm sorry. Look, there's a lot of people that listen to this podcast. I don't have to be one of them. All right, guys, let's go into the question. What if the ocean was carbonated? And I'm going to take the first stab at this one. So, as a whole, this is in the bad category.
We know you've been trying to be optimistic in the last few questions.
Yeah, I'm trying to be the bright, sunshiny voice of positivity on this podcast, but this one is, there's really not so much sunshine at the end of the rainbow. So, carbonation, as you may guess, is because of carbon dioxide. So, the way carbon bubbles form is that there's enough carbon dioxide dissolved in the liquid that extra carbon forms into bubbles. So, basically, for the ocean to be carbonated, it has to be completely soluble, when all the solubles are in the liquid.
Dissolved?
There's a chemistry word.
Saturated?
Saturated. Saturated. Has to be fully saturated. I am on an audio roll here today. Has to be fully saturated, which results with the ocean going from a pH of 7, which is healthy for fish, to a pH of 3, which is quite acidic and not so healthy for fish.
It's pretty bad, yeah.
There are actually fish that can resist higher pH levels, like the rainbow fish in Australia, but even they can only manage a 3.5 on the pH scale. So a pH of 3 literally just kills all the fish in the ocean.
And then free fish for us.
Yeah. So actually, yes, free fish for us, because of the carbonation, like, fish aren't super dense. Like, they really are just about the same density as water, so they, you know, don't sink or float unnaturally. So, with the carbonation, the corpses of all the fish and all the animals are going to float up to the surface of the ocean, which is going to just be gross.
So, are we even going to be able to see the water? It's just going to be all fish.
So, that's the first thing I checked. There is going to be 7.5 billion tons of dead fish on the ocean surface. And if you do that across the entire surface area of the ocean, you end up with a layer of fish that is 0.04 millimeters. So you can still see the water. As we've said before on this podcast, the ocean's fucking big and pretty empty, it turns out. But that's only if it's evenly distributed. Actually, what happens is that the surface currents end up bringing things floating on the ocean surface into different concentrated areas. So if you guys have heard of the Great Pacific Garbage Patch, where all the plastic shit that we throw into the ocean actually starts to congregate in this one area in the middle, pretty much dead center in the middle of the Pacific Ocean. But it's just basically like almost an island of plastic that stretches for miles and miles and miles and miles and miles. So I found research on that where the concentration of like the plastics, if it was evenly distributed, compared to the patches, it's 15 times higher concentration of plastics in the patch area. So we're going to go up to just, like, it's still like half a millimeter of fish, but I think if you break that into fish that are, like, next to each other, it's still a lot of fish, and it's going to be gross.
So just don't go there.
Yeah, so I'm going to take a small segue and loop back around to this being gross. So the one thing I was thinking of is, so you have these bubbles like forming at the bottom of the ocean, which is kind of how I took it, where like a soda can, like a bubble forms all the way on the bottom and then goes all the way up the glass and pops.
Oh, should we point out that we said the ocean doesn't like get flat, it just stays carbonated?
Yeah, I guess new carbonation forms on the bottom is kind of how I took
it. Yeah.
So all the way at the bottom of the ocean, with the cold temperatures and the high pressure, the pressure is the main thing. And the pressure is 12,000 atmospheres, or 17,500 pounds per square foot of pressure at the bottom of the ocean. The funny thing about bubbles is that in order to form like a tiny, like say quarter inch bubble at the bottom of the ocean, you actually need a big dense concentration of carbon dioxide in that little bubble. And by Boyle's law, as you decrease the pressure around the bubble, the gas is going to expand. And the bottom of the ocean is so pressurized that by the time your quarter inch bubble gets to the top, the surface of the ocean, it is going to expand from that quarter inch to a 25 foot bubble of carbon dioxide that's going to pop on the ocean surface.
Awesome.
That's amazing.
And that's just one bubble. That's not bubbles combined. That's one bubble. So the ocean is going to be fucking popping. Which is going to be gross because there's going to be a lot of fish chunks flying around. And I'm going to take it one step further in the gross direction, because all these bubbles that are popping are pure CO2 gas. And CO2 gas is denser than the air. So it eventually mixes in with the atmosphere, but at the rate it's coming up, it's just going to be sitting on the ocean surface. So all these fish are going to be basically swimming around in basically pure CO2, which is problematic because there's two ways things decompose: aerobic decomposition and anaerobic decomposition. Aerobic decomposition is a typical way things break down. It goes pretty quickly. It's actually not super stinky, but it requires oxygen. Anaerobic decomposition, which is what our case is going to be, is much slower, much stinkier. And it was hard to find actually exactly what makes it so dang stinky. Sulfur was mentioned a few times, but not everything has sulfur in it. But basically, picture like a decaying squirrel on the side of the road. And now this is like a much worse version of that decay, except it's like forever and everywhere in the ocean. And also getting shot around by 25-foot bubbles. And that's kind of where I ended up, is that's just going to be really gross.
Yeah, no, that's a reasonable frame of mind on this one, I think, yeah.
I think those bubbles are like a combination of both cool and gross.
Yeah, it's cool and gross. Like, sailing's going to be just kind of a no-brainer. Like, I think there's really just going to be like a whole layer of carbon dioxide in the ocean, so you can't like be on a boat and breathe at the same time, so...
Well, I'll get to that.
Yeah.
I'm going to counter your sailing not being cool thing by saying that things like jet skiing or water skiing will be quite cool, actually.
Maybe. I just, like, what if you go into a bubble of pure CO2 while you're skiing? Do you just...
Well, you can use the bubble and use it as tricks.
Exactly.
Just, like, pop off the bubble.
This would be a very cool video game. It'd
be a very cool video
game. Wave Race 64 needs to make a comeback. I'm going to send them a letter. Dear Bethesda? I'm going to guess it's Bethesda.
It's not Bethesda. I don't know who it is, but I do know that it's not Bethesda.
Well, it was on the Nintendo 64.
Yeah, a very popular platform, Bethesda, for Bethesda. I can't say that five times fast, so I'm gonna pull the eject button on this on my conversation.
Basically, what you're saying is that you want Wave Racer 64 calories, which is a Michelob Ultra sponsorship.
Yeah, there you go.
Boom, done. All right.
Also, they did make a Wave Race sequel on the GameCube.
What?
Yeah.
Your prayers have been answered.
Hell yeah, I'm gonna go play that. I hope that has lots of bubbles.
I mean, the ocean wasn't carbonated in it, but...
Oh, well.
There's still work to be done.
We got new technology here in 2018, so...
Yeah, that's why I didn't get a perfect score.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's exactly the review was, you know, 9.9 out of 10.
Reviewers describe it as a little flat.
Sorry, that really got me. Can I stop answering this question now, Chris? Save me. Save me from myself and from you people, apparently.
Yes, I will take the reins from you. So I am also in the camp that this is a bad thing. I looked specifically at the atmospheric CO2.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, like, it's got to go somewhere after it leaves
the ocean. Yeah, it's got to go somewhere. So normally, as Marcus said, normally the CO2 has like a cycle and it gets like absorbed into the ocean. But now the ocean is saturated. So that doesn't happen anymore. So it's basically just going to go into the atmosphere. And I wanted to look at like how much CO2 would go into the atmosphere. So I looked at the amount of water. There's a lot of water. There's 1.26 times 10 to the 21 liters of water in the ocean. And the average Coca-Cola, or just like a liter of Coca-Cola, has 6.2 grams of CO2 in it.
See, you never see that on the nutrition facts.
Yeah, I know. They should list that somewhere. So I wanted to see, like, how fast does the Coca-Cola, a liter of Coca-Cola, release the CO2? And this was pretty difficult to find. Like, there are no scientific studies on this or anything. There's one very, very unscientific experiment where a guy just poured a Coca-Cola into a glass and counted the bubbles.
Wait, what? How?
I don't know exactly how he counted the bubbles, but that's what he said. He said that he left it there for 97 minutes, and after 97 minutes, the bubbles were only... there were only 6 bubbles per minute, and that's when he determined that it was flat.
Well, it sounds like it's still going at 6 bubbles a minute.
I know. So I mean, that's the only thing I saw in my research, so I'm going to go with that. So I'm going to say that after 97 minutes, a liter of Coke or carbonated whatever is flat. So 6.2 grams of CO2 is released in 97 minutes from a liter. And obviously, it depends on temperature. So that experiment was at room temperature. And if it's hotter, then it releases faster. If it's colder, it releases slower. So looking at the ocean, I wanted to look at the average temperature of the ocean. And it actually varies a lot depending on like where you are in the world and like how deep you go. So I did like an average of the surface ocean and the deep ocean. The average of the surface ocean is 59 to 68 degrees Fahrenheit. And that's like roughly room temper-ish. The deep ocean, the average temperature is like 32 to 37 degrees Fahrenheit.
Yeah, I actually got that same fact when I was looking at my bubbles. I thought it was going to be colder at the bottom of the ocean.
Yeah. I mean, yeah.
I guess water freezes, but at the same time, like, you know, it seems like a fact that would be a smaller number.
Yeah. So anyway, since there's like this temperature differential, I think most of the CO2 will come from like the surface ocean. So I really just looked at that. I kind of ignored the deep ocean.
Yeah, it makes sense.
And the surface ocean makes up 10% of the ocean volume. So, I mean, it's still a lot. It's still 1.26 times 10 to the 20 liters. So, yeah, if we take the rate of CO2 released from that experiment, the unscientific experiment, the CO2 released from the ocean will be 4.83 grams, or 4.83 times 10 to the 20 grams per hour. That's per hour.
That seems like, how much atmosphere do we have?
Yeah, so the atmosphere, the current atmosphere, has 2.69 times 10 to the 18 grams of CO2. So it's going to be releasing 179 times the amount of the current CO2 in the atmosphere per hour.
Fuck.
That's pretty bad.
So my imagination of a, like, just on top of the ocean, you know, a bunch of feet of only CO2 was optimistic at best.
Yes. Yeah, if you look at the yearly release, it's 240 million times per year. So, I mean, obviously, this is bad. I think this just pretty much immediately kills everything.
Right.
Not plants.
I think plants still do need, like, a little bit of oxygen, I think.
You know, it's tough to say. I actually looked into this specific fact, and from what I could tell, there's not a consensus on the answer, but there is two schools of thought based on the Reddit post I saw and the two responses, where one person was, like, dismissive and, like, everything's gonna die, you idiot. And then the second person was like, well, actually, the plant can produce, you know, run through the cycle once, and they actually can produce, the action they produce lets them re-trigger the reaction. But I wasn't really convinced by him either. I don't remember his username, but it was something silly. So it's like, he looked, sounded smarter, but he had a silly username compared to the person who was just dismissive and was like, everything's gonna die.
Mm.
Who, I don't remember his username, because he could have been like a scientist or something.
Was it Chris Yee?
No.
It might have been Chris Yee.
Did you go around answering the question you were researching? Because that's a really good way to get research, is you just find out. You just produce what you answer. Need.
Someone online says.
And that someone is me. Yeah, so, like, everyone will die of suffocation. It also increased global warming by, like, a very significant amount. And I think the global warming thing will kind of just feed this problem, because it'll heat up the oceans, which means that it releases CO2 faster, which means that global warming happens faster. So it's just going to be like a cycle. And I was going to look into like the long-term impacts of this, but like the short-term impact is that everyone dies, and then the long-term impact is that everyone is still dead. So,
right. Yeah. It's more like, it's less of a cycle and more of a punctuation mark.
Yeah.
Right.
So that's really as far as my research went.
Well, I mean, there's nothing, no one left to do research for, so I mean, they're just all dead already.
Yeah, I know. So
Ben, did you kill everybody?
So fun fact, so, hey Marcus, you sniped about 80% of my answer.
Yes! Did it.
The rest of my answer is pretty depressing, so I'm going to say that. And then, because this has been a pretty depressing half, we're going to just brainstorm some good things about carbonated oceans.
Okay. Because
we need to swing this one back on up.
I like that idea.
So, sort of the thing that I think both of you sort of didn't see in this ways that the planet's going to die is that approximately half of the world's oxygen is produced by phytoplankton, which are these one-celled organisms that live on the surface of the ocean that are already starting to be affected by the increased acidification because of increased carbon dioxide. So when this happens, they are all going to die, and that's going to get rid of half of the Earth's oxygen production and also its, you know, carbon filtration. So it's actually worse than you thought. So yeah. And also, in case the acidity wasn't going to kill them, apparently most of their fertilizer comes from, like, fish poop. Which, fun fact, a blue whale will poop out 3 tons of nitrogen and iron-rich feces per day.
Where does he even get all that nitrogen from?
It is a pretty fun fact.
It's a pretty fun fact in our planet that's now dead.
Wait, so are both of our answers today void of poop?
Oh. There's no poop problem. We've eliminated the
poop problem by eliminating all life on the planet.
Twice! In the same episode!
Well, the first poop problem was just because nobody eats.
Yeah, and now nobody's eating because everyone's dead.
Right. Anyway, all right, guys, let's get some silver linings on these clouds. All right, I'll go first. When you're at the beach, you can make cocktails really easily.
Well, salty cocktails. I guess you could just pour...
Yes, it's still salt water.
It is salt water.
I guess
water.
You just pour tequila in it, and it's basically like a tequila
right.
shot.
Right, you just bring, like, tequila and lime, and, like...
I don't even know what, like, carbonated salt water would taste like.
Probably not good, which is why you add a bunch of tequila and lime.
And tequila is actually just known for making everything taste better. It's like the mixer in college where you're like, oh man, this alcohol tastes bad. I'll just put some tequila in it, and it's gonna taste way better.
Right. I think you can make it work. You know, it's not going to be ideal, but it's like one step less in the process. So that is nice.
You could harness the energy of the bubbles to create some infinite energy, which would be pretty cool. Like you have like a little spinny bit that will like get pushed up by the bubbles and take that motion into a generator. And now that I'm thinking about that...
It's not going to work, right?
It's probably just a worse version of wave energy.
Oh, yeah.
Moving bubbles are way weaker than moving water, and we already don't use that because why don't we just burn fossil fuels instead?
Right, yeah.
Carbon's great.
And one thing I did start to look into that I was really sad didn't pan out was I was hoping there was going to be some major impact to, like shipping by cargo ships because of, like, the decreased density of carbonated water. But it's not that much less dense... So that didn't really go anywhere. So, hey, that's still fine before we all die.
You could make some really shitty homemade boats that would still float.
That's true.
Yeah, pretty much like everything would float.
Wait, no. Things would float less easily because it's less dense it's less dense than regular water.
No, but there's physical force pushing
upward. from the bubbles.
If you put a straw in a bubbly drink, the straw rises up.
As opposed to flat, if just like in water, it sinks.
Fair enough. All right.
So you can float better. You can make shittier boats. I think what you said about the jet skiing is a legit thing. If you have 25-foot bubbles, like, that's fun.
That is very fun.
That's fun. Yeah. Also, like, I now have an image of this bubble rising through the ocean while still underwater, and, like, a fish is just, like, minding his day. It's like, whoa! And then just hits the other side of the bubble.
You mentioned that the water is more acidic, right?
Yeah.
Is there anything we can do with that in a positive way?
In case you can't tell, listeners, we are grasping at straws.
Floaty straws. We won't lose our straws in the ocean, and the turtles will be saved. If the straws float, they can't get eaten by the turtles. This is a real problem, this straw problem, Ben. Don't ignore me.
Specifically Ben.
Well, I mean, saving the turtles is going to be tricky because they're all going to be dead from the increased acidity in the water. But we're trying to be positive.
But I mean, besides the acidity and the lack of oxygen, turtles are probably best suited to deal with exploding bubbles all the
That's
time.
That's true.
They got that nice heavy shell.
They can hitch a ride and get flung across the sea.
I think what it is if we really wanted to have a positive answer here and loop it around to, you know, something good for the planet, we would have had to go back in time and change the question. This changing the ocean does not result in good things ever.
Here's what we do. What if the ocean was carbonated, and what if nobody could die?
What if nothing could die?
Yeah, nothing. Okay, that's better.
In that case...
All the things we said, but without the writer that except they're already dead.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Awesome. We've done it. We have solved the problem.
Alternatively... all of our answers from the first question, except also jet skis are more fun. Take your
yeah, pick. That would basically be our answer to this question.
Yep.
So, yeah, you guys can enjoy those answers, and you can tune in next week for the answers to these following questions. What if all plastic disappeared? And which cereal mascot would win in a fight? If you have any questions, comments, or your own hypothetical idea you want us to answer, let us know. You can reach us by email at absurdhypotheticals@gmail.com, send us a tweet at absurdhype, that's H-Y-P-E hype, visit our website, www.nerdchomp.com/absurdhypotheticals, and if you enjoyed the show, don't forget to subscribe and leave us a review on iTunes. It really helps out the show and lets us keep making it for you.